Welcome back. I'm Mark Steiner, and the Mark Steiner Show is made possible by the University of Maryland Women's Health for every stage of a woman's life, offering compassionate care and comprehensive obstetric and gynecological services from routine exams to specialized pelvic surgery. More information at 1-800-492-5538 or www.umm.edu/Women's Center, or you can go to the Steiner Show website and click on the University of Maryland banner and get the information there. And last night we had, a lot of information. Some say maybe not enough. We'll talk about all that this hour with the as we analyze the President's State of the Union address, or now as some media seems to want to shorten it to SOTU, because they like to do that these days. We are joined in studio by Bob Summerby, who is editor of the Daily Howler, and joining us by phone, could not make her way through the snow, and I don't blame her, Darlene Kennedy.
Hey, Mark. Nice talking to you.
Good talking to you, too. Law professor.
I just figured you were newlywed, and you and your wife wouldn't want to hit me up after the show, so.
Well, we'll see how long it takes me to get home from here.
Yeah.
410-319-8888 is the number here to join us. Your thoughts about last night's speech that President Barack Obama gave. And before I launch into any kind of major questioning, which I will do in my thoughts here and there, and we'll play a couple of clips to kind of jar our listeners and our guests into commentary, your comments on the speech and what you thought, what were your general feelings as you and your analysis as you watched it and then as it finished. Let's start with Dr. Summerby, then go to Dr. Kennedy.
You know, as I watched it, I have to say I kind of liked it. And normally, you know, the State of the Union address is a kind of a long, hard slog through the evening.
And it was a long one, too.
It was a long one. And I have to say, it occurred to me, if they hadn't changed the seating procedure so people weren't standing up and interrupting every, literally on every sentence, how long would that speech have gone? I mean, it was an hour without the excessive. But, you know, the members of Congress sat with friends from the other party, which I have to say, you know, I'm going to be honest, I enjoyed seeing that. I have a college classmate, Bobby Scott, representative from the Norfolk area, a black Democrat, and was sitting there with Eric Cantor.
Oh, really?
A white Republican from the Richmond area. I'd say I felt kind of, it made me feel good to see the guys sitting there. They don't have to be constantly off of our tribal separation.
Right.
We're
right.
Not two separate species. Not yet. We're working on it. I kind of liked the speech watching it. It was a little different from the standard laundry list speech. Having said that, you know, we're going to have to wait till Obama presents a budget to see what he's really proposing for the future. And what difference does it really make what he proposes? Because it's pretty clear that, you know, our politics is such a mess now. I don't know what to say, Mark. I mean, he said at the end, the State of the Union is good. I'm not sure I agree with that one. That if he had said that at the beginning, I would have said, that's just bull. But you know, so that maybe that's why he saved it for the end. But those are my reactions just watching it.
Darlene Kennedy, what were your reactions?
You know, I have to say, I always give him an A+ for presentation. I may not agree with him policy-wise, but I think he's a great public speaker. I thought last night, however, he seemed, a little bit off his mark. I thought he I really couldn't put a finger on it. I'm not saying it was horrible in terms of his presentation, but it wasn't one of his better speeches, and I understand, I guess, the thought of trying to be conciliatory, trying to have a more lighter tone in light of what happened, a few weeks ago with the shooting, and I'm sure that was part of the thought process in putting it together. I'm sure we're going to go into more detail about the substance of it, which left me, you know, wondering quite a bit about how some of these proposals are going to happen or if they're even possibly going to happen. And I do agree that, unfortunately, the State of the Union isn't in a good place right now. And I think that I wish he had really highlighted some of his, in a more substantive manner, what plans he has to move forward. I know he threw out a couple of things about, you know, holding spending, et cetera, et cetera. I know we're going to talk in more detail about it, but I really didn't think he, you know, laid out something that I can really put my hands around. It, you know, like I said, it generally was a decent speech. I did enjoy watching. I'm 45 years old, and it's the first time in my history ever seeing either the Democrats and the Republicans sitting together like they're on a prom date or at the movies together, and it was kind of cute to watch. And I think it did slow down. I mean, it did speed up the speech because it ended up being only 62 minutes when it probably could have been a lot longer. So in that sense, I was pleased that they shared the spaces together for a change.
It was interesting to see Roscoe Bartlett sitting next to Nancy Pelosi.
Yeah. I liked all of it. I'm going to tell you, I really liked it. And I mean, and a lot of people were sort of making fun of it. It was like they're on dates. Well, it was also sort of like they're human beings, you know.
Right.
And we have turned ourselves into two warring factions in ways that are so foolish and so counterproductive. And I blame both sides for this.
But let me ask this question. We'll open the phones. Antonio and Al, the first two callers up. I want to hear your thoughts about the State of the Union address last night. And we'll throw out some pointed questions here during the course of this conversation with our two guests. But in what you just said, Bob, this is a very divided nation at the moment. But having said that, the question is, from a lot of perspectives, what kind of speech President Barack Obama could have given or should have given? Some people think he should have given a speech that you might have thought was more divisive, which is something that hit hard on issues of unemployment, corporate power, the war, global warming, what our responsibility is, those kinds of things that didn't get hit upon, didn't relate to the issues that do divide us in a way, what his vision of America is, which would be different than Congressman Cantor's or Congressman Bartlett's or Bonner sitting behind him. And so the question is, what do we expect a president to say? I mean, this was a speech that some think was from a Democratic side, Republican light, or appeasing, or and others think it didn't have a lot of substance because it didn't have any spit and vinegar in it. I mean, so when you think about that in terms of your analysis of us getting really tired of this kind of divide we have, I mean, how do you?
Well, partly in response to what you just said, I'm kind of tired of seeing, as a liberal, I'm kind of tired of seeing the liberal world putting it all on Obama or before that on Clinton. It can't all be, you know, the president is not a wizard. He can't come in and just suddenly, there's nothing that President Obama could have said last night about various issues that would have made any difference at all. One of the things I liked about the speech, he started with the concept that we're all a family. And I have to say, as silly as that sounds, I think as a society, we have to go back to certain notions of family and especially citizenship. There are certain duties of citizenship that we have trampled on in such ludicrous ways. And if you put on your cable channels, you get to see the two different tribes trampling all over them last night, even after the speech. I just think we've reached a point, and it's partly because of what happened in Tucson, we've reached a point where I just don't think last night was necessarily the night to lie. People were concerned he didn't talk about gun control.
Right.
There is no gun control. I mean, we have reached a state in our politics. The Democratic Party quit on gun control in November of 2000, I am told. I was told in December of 2000 by people that knew that the Democratic Party decided that Al Gore lost Tennessee and West Virginia because of the NRA. And that the Democratic Party had decided there was never going to proceed on gun control again, that it was a settled issue. Now, that I don't think that's necessarily a great thing, but that's the state of our politics. That's where, and this is now 11 years later, and a lot of people are still acting like they don't get why Democratic presidents don't go out running around. Al Gore talked about gun control. He got massacred in his own state by the NRA and in West Virginia by gigantic advertising campaigns. That's part of our national politics. And I don't see anyone within the liberal world, I don't see people acting like they understand that. That is part of the geometry of our politics now. That's just the way it is. I don't think it's a good thing, but there it is. I mean, that's just the way it is.
Well, I think that well, I certainly didn't expect any of that type of discussion to happen last night, certainly timing-wise, and I just don't think necessarily that's where the president is really interested in focusing his energy, you know, from what I can gather from what he's been doing so far in office. But I do think he used this opportunity to maybe, you know, they took a beating, the Democrats took a beating in this recent election, and I think that this was his opportunity, President Obama's opportunity, to show a more middle of the road, for lack of a better description, maybe some would call centrist type of demeanor, as we saw with President Clinton back in 95, 96, when, you know, welfare reform was a big issue. The Republicans wanted to change it. He vetoed it twice and then eventually signed off on it. And I think that we're kind of in a similar situation where there are things he's adamant about, you know, getting health care the way he wants it. Obviously, the Republicans have a different idea of what they want to see with health care. And so I think he wanted this opportunity to be more like, okay, we're going to come to the table. We're going to, America, you know, we're going to work this out. And whether he runs it, which I suspect he will run, you know, in 2012, this is kind of the segue to that next step. I mean, but the fact of the matter is, as far as I'm concerned, I was, you know, disappointed but not surprised. He really didn't talk much about, I mean, he was mentioned lightly, but, I mean, you know, we have a very high unemployment rate. Our deficit is in the trillions. The one thing I have to say that I did agree with him on, believe it or not, was the issue about America building, and this has been one of my biggest pet peeves for the last 15, 20 years. We don't, you know, I say it jokingly, we don't make widgets anymore. I mean, yeah, you don't really need a widget because you have electronics and all kinds of other gizmos out there, but the point is, you know, all the manufacturing has left this country or practically left this country. So we are reliant on foreign countries to buy a lot of products, televisions, electronics. We're paying taxes on those purchases when they come into this country. And it's really hurting us. And, you know, we're in a lot of debt. And, you know, he mentioned about cutting corporate tax. But, you know, who's to say what that plan will be? And, again, back to we're not going to do any more in terms of the budget, in terms of, you know, making it higher, but with the ideas that he did present about education and things like that, that will cause spending to go up. So, you know, I think he kind of talked out of both sides of his mouth. You know, we don't want it to go any higher, but, you know, it will go higher, particularly if these are programs that he wants to implement before the end of his first term as president.
Yeah, I guess what I would say is, and I don't have any idea what President Obama or his administration are actually planning to do or propose. I don't know what he wants to do or what he hopes or dreams of accomplishing. I would say, watching that speech last night, it was a little bit from a center-left perspective, kind of like, quote-unquote, politics for dummies. He was back to some very basic concepts about about the concept of investing, of building for the future, of building infrastructure. This is back to a real remedial politics. But our politics right now, our store of concepts, and I mean on the left, among liberals and progressives, if you watch the burgeoning liberal world of cable and the web, the liberal world today is all about waiting for Michelle Bachmann now, who's replacing Sarah Palin, to say something sort of dumb, and then to spend a week talking about how she said something dumb. That's just not politics. That's just not a politics that will ever take us anywhere. And I saw President Obama sitting us down in the summer school last night and saying, "Remember when we used to, you know, build things like the interstate highway system, and we invested." You know, I mean, it's like we've all lost our minds. And I think it was a sort of a. I think in many ways, as simple-minded as his speech was, it was sort of what we need. We're really back to basics in our conceptual world. We're just floundering badly in every way. And I thought the address in many ways was very interesting.
Well, I'm going to come – some of the things that you were just mentioning, both of you, I want to come back to. I'm going to open the phones here and see what our listeners think before we play some clips. 410-319-8888 is the number here. What did you think of the State of the Union address last night and how it addressed your lives, your concerns, the things you think about? What do you think he said to the nation? 410-319-8888 is the number here. We are joined by Bob Summerby, editor of the Daily Howler, and Darlene Kennedy, who is a law professor at Widener Law School.
Formerly at Widener.
Formerly at Widener?
Yes.
Call you, what should we just say, a commentator?
Just a lawyer and a commentator, but I'm not at Widener now.
So. Okay. Take that off my list. 410-319-8888. Antonio, you're on the air.
Yes, good evening. How are you?
I'm well. Welcome.
Great. I loved it. I loved the speech. It was the first time, and I'm 61. It's the first time that I've ever been able to actually listen to the speech and actually get something out of it. You know, and what everybody's missing is the concept, is that the Democrats and Republicans were all mixed together, and that's what we need. We have to bring everybody together in order to make the proper decisions and the proper laws that need to be done. And this is the first time where I've ever seen a president, after each issue, everybody got up and gave him a standing ovation, you know? So it was something there for everybody, the common man who decides to make a business on his own. And he even realized that, you know, these small things add up to big things. I love the speech, and to me, here, the first thing I turned my TV on this morning, and I'm not going to say the channel, but here's the lady on there. She's talking about she didn't like Republicans and the Democrats sitting together. What difference does that make? It doesn't make a bit of difference. The point is that they're together there. He's starting to a whole program right there. That's the first of it, to bring them together so that things can be done. You know, that other old stuff is out. We don't need that. We don't need a whole lot of rebuttal and the bill going through Congress and then going through the House of the Delegates and then it's being killed and going, you know, we need progress. And everything he talked about, even immigration, every subject that he touched on, you know, and I'm not a dummy, but it was in layman terms where you could understand it.
Right,
you
know, right.
Exactly what the man was saying.
And to me,
I felt as though that, you know, for the time that he had to present that, was that he touched on the main issues. All the other presidents, it was like a big pot of a soup with everything thrown in there. You know, they're talking so much about this too; they don't even touch on that because they don't want to.
Okay, I
completely agree with the caller. That was my reaction. You know, President Obama said some nice things about John Boehner, who was sitting behind him. I wish he had said nicer things. I wish he had made him cry. I mean, we just have to break down this politics of hatred that is just
okay. We do have
just,
to do that.
I mean, nothing can work until and the only people that will ever win, as long as it's so deeply said, is the oligarchs. That they're the only ones that can win, as long as the rest of us are all sitting around hating on each other. I completely agree with the call. The caller's reactions were my reactions.
Well, you know, when the caller mentioned something that caught my attention as well, with the gentleman who created the machinery to get the Chilean miners out, and I thought that would have been such a great opportunity. I mean, certainly. That kind of goes back to my comments earlier about, you know, America actually making things, producing things that, you know, we can use here, maybe sell across the sea. But also the fact that, you know, it would have been nice to see the president say, you know, this is a businessman. You know, he had an idea. He made it happen. He rescued these guys. And, you know, as a result, you know, that's how his business will flourish. And what can we do as a legislative body, as the government, to help other businesses flourish? Maybe, you know, he did mention cutting the corporate tax, but who knows what that means exactly. I mean, you know, we've lost so many jobs, and part of the problem we've lost jobs is because of tax issues. A lot of companies have run scared because of the health care. I know this is not a debate about health care. I'm just saying one of the results of the passage has been people have been let go because that employers are concerned about having to pay health insurance. So, I mean, and that's a real fact, and that's reality. And, you know, how are we going to get those people back to work without it necessarily being more programs through the government? I mean, the government is a necessary entity. I don't deny that. I think that we always have to have a safety net for those who may fall through the cracks. But I also think one of the things that needs to happen is, as a country, we need to be more encouraging to small businesses, large businesses. I'm not talking about corporate welfare or anything like that, or special interests or anything. I'm just saying that, you know, businesses is how this country grew. You know, people came up with ideas. This country became great, you know,
digging
for gold, digging for oil, whatever it is, you know, taking cotton and making clothing out of it. So, I mean, those things are part of our American, you know, fabric, and we need to, and we're not necessarily going to be doing a lot of hands-on building anymore, but technology, education, those are the things that, whether it's,
but Washington,
or local, it has to be fixed.
But and I want to go to the next caller. Calvin and Mike, hold on. We're going to come to your call, but I'm going to pick up what Antonio said and what my two guests were just saying here, Bob Sonnenby and just now Darlene Kennedy, that
you can hear Darlene moving in a partisan direction, which I refuse to do.
Well,
go ahead, Mark.
I'm a former Democrat.
I only said that because Mark was pausing to collect his thoughts.
But, you know, it's true that the rancorous nature of our dialogue is, I think, hurting the nation. Though I don't think it's the first time in history. It's been like, I mean, any student of history sees, whether it's the election of 1800 and beyond, there was some of the most ugly times in American history, and we are in one of those again now. So it's nothing new that we've done this. We just have a different kind of media that puts it in our face all the time. But, you know, I had a show last night with three Republicans and me. And I made clear that the idea of when one of our guests, who I respect a great deal, was kind of getting like the nasty attack on progressive liberals. I'm going, that's the problem. That's all we end up doing with one another. We sit and attack each other. We don't talk about visions of where we think the country should go. And that's what I was hoping to hear more of from President Barack Obama last night, was his vision of where we should go and how we're going to get there. I mean, it's when
he's, well, he sort of gave a vision. Now, I'm not saying it adds up, but he sort of did to some extent. He gave every vision you could give without bringing up any one of the sort of flashpoint concepts. As soon as you bring up unemployed, then we're back where, you know, I have no idea why he did the speech he did or what his ultimate. I'm not speaking for him or against him.
Right, right.
I'm just saying, I will say he did avoid the flashpoint topics, gun control being one, unemployment being another.
Well, you know, I think long term the proof will be in the pudding. I mean, you know, it will have to see when the House of Representatives starts passing bills or sending bills up to him, how he reacts. And certainly as an ideological person, he will vote, you know, veto or sign something based on if he supports it or believes it. But, you know, that's the time when both sides of the table are going to have to show their true cards and say, we're willing to work on this. We're willing to, you know, find a middle of the road where both sides don't feel like they've compromised. And, you know, how it's done, you know, it's going to take them and they're human beings. I mean, you mentioned something, Mark, and it would have been a better time to say this had things not happened in Arizona, but you talked about the 1800s and when our country was first born. And, you know, we have become a more civilized country, you know. Perhaps our mouths are a little bit more potty than they used to be, but, you know, in those days, people, you know, you went out and dueled one another if you didn't like each other's politics. So, I mean, we have come a long way. Do we have a long way to go? Certainly. But I think the way this is going to be resolved is certainly us being more conciliatory towards one another. There's no reason to have ad hominem attacks on one another. I don't need to attack Mark as a human being if I don't agree with his policy. I can say, Mark, I don't agree with your policy, and this is why I don't agree with it. And that, you know, that's civil dialogue, and I certainly think as adults we are all capable of it.
I guess what I'm saying is I think that what you were saying earlier, what Bob was saying earlier about On the progressive side, people have spent all their time attacking Sarah Palin, attacking Bachman and the rest, and beating up on Mindy Jake. The right-wing talk show hosts are just, you know, saying the most disgusting things about Barack Obama and about other people they don't like. That's what I'm saying is, if the groundwork was laid, whether you agreed with Barack Obama or not, of what a vision of how we're going to get to the place we have to, how are we going to end unemployment, how are we going to put this country back on its feet? When you talk about putting education first, when you talk about building the infrastructure of America, whether it's our roads and bridges or rail or laying on the internet, 98% was kind of weird. I always wonder who the 2% are that aren't going to get the internet. But when you talk about that means you have to discuss how you're going to do it. And how you're going to do it costs money. It costs money to build the highway system. It costs money to build lay down the tracks across America that built the railroad in the 19th century. The government paid for those things when they were put on when they were put down. So we have to talk about where it's coming from and what's the vision of how we're going to get there. That's what I thought was missing a little bit.
Well, my visceral reaction listening
to Barack Obama. The visceral reaction to listen to the speech was, I got home, I listened to it in the car on the way home, and got home and watched the rest of it with Valerie and said, I liked it. I liked his delivery, I liked some things he was saying. Overall, it was a pleasant speech. But I guess I wanted more vision out of where we're going to go.
See, I thought the speech was all vision. It was just a beginner's vision, and I think that's where we are.
Well, we have to take a break. And so we got Calvin and Mike. As soon as we come back from this break, Calvin and Mike, we're going to come right to Calvin and then to Mike. And the others calling in 410-319-8888. We're going to take your calls as well as we look at the president's speech. And we'll be right back. On the way to the break, let me just say, the city paper that supports the WEAA, this week's issue of the city paper, The Gardener checks in with Global Poster Company and the efforts to save its trove of cultural history. In Mobtown Beat, Van Smith reports on the sentencing of a Black Gorilla Family gang leader. And in Eat Me, Henry Hong sets out on the road to the Chili Bowl. We'll be right back to look at the State of the Union address, going right to Calvin and Mike, our first two callers up. We'll be right back. Stay with us. Welcome back. I'm Mark Steiner, and support for WEAA is provided by College Goal Maryland. College Goal Maryland is an annual event that gives students and their families the chance to speak with financial aid professionals and help completing forms colleges require for scholarships, grants, and loans. For more information about the 9 sites in Maryland, the online link is collegegoalsundaymd.org or 877-632-4709. We are joined here this evening by Bob Somerby, who is editor of the Daily Howler, and lawyer and political commentator Darlene Kennedy, as we look at last night's speech by President Barack Obama. We're going to play a clip in just a moment, but let's go 410-319-8888 and go to Calvin in Baltimore. You're on the air.
Hello, Mark and guests.
Welcome.
Hi.
Thank you. First, I want to say thank you for adding substance to this conversation. I feel like his speech was appropriate and that really had a great and realistic vision. He laid out a general agenda, but it was based on, you know, particular focuses, you know, jobs, government spending, and how we can actually lead in the future, which we, you know, he talked about how we kind of fell off. You know, it wasn't perfect because we don't know what the budget is yet and how exactly we can do it. But I feel like it's a path that a majority of the people can really agree on. I mean, you know, cutting big oil loopholes, you know, and reinvesting that money, cutting out, you know, big government spending now that we're out of the what they call the worst of the recession, you know, but not necessarily leaving out the people who really need the help, the poor, at least. Investing in education. He also mentioned not allowing for any bill to pass his desk to have pork in it or allowing for the corporate interest to really run our legislation. And he also talked about restructuring government so it's streamlined and more efficient. I feel like, you know, he really touched on some really key points. And I actually was kind of disappointed in the coverage immediately after the speech, because it made it into a huge drama. You know, looked at how many people stood up and, you know, the faces that people were making and,
right.
and you know, who sat beside each other. I felt like that's the wrong question. Mark, again, I want to really thank you for bringing the substance to it, because the question should be, how do we do it? You know, as the president, ask the president, how do we do it? Ask the people, how do we do it? Ask your representatives and government, how do we get these things done? And that's pretty much how I felt about the speech.
Kevin, I appreciate your thoughts.
Yeah, I would say the conceptual drama of the address, the conceptual drama, turned around the question of investment versus spending. Because the sort of the talk before the speech, you know, in the day or two before the sort of leaked, you know, excerpts, had to deal with the idea that Obama was going to recommend certain kinds of investments. We need to go back to investing in the future. And the Republican response instantly was investment is a fancy word for spending.
Well, I mean, how do you invest without using some kind of capital? And, you know, Mark mentioned the point that, you know, as the president was talking about all these things he would like to do, you know, build more highways and education, it's all going to take money. And I think the purpose of the State of the Union is to make people feel, you know, okay, we're moving along, things are going to get better. So, of course, saying, well, these are all the great things I have in store, but not telling us how it's going to happen, because if he said to us, well, this is going to cost us another $5 trillion, I'm just throwing a number out there, another $10 trillion, you know, we're going to have to borrow more money from China, what have you, then people would be, whether they're, you know, Republican or Democrat, I think as an American people, we'd be crazed, because we think, oh my gosh, more spending from the government, and we're, you know, we got to spend more to get more, and that's not always necessarily the case. I mean, he did mention about, you know, cutting our wallets or pinching our pennies or what have you, but the government, of all entities, needs to be an example of that. And I'm bothered personally by the term investment, because, you know, you have to put something in to make an investment, and so that does mean spending, unless there are programs that he's going to cut and take that money from those programs and put it into his investing. It's got to come from somewhere, and that is certainly a big concern of mine.
Yeah, any investment does necessarily involve spending, but what he was saying last night was, remember what we've done in the past at various times when we did spend a lot of money in an investment in the future, in the interstate highway, the reaction to the, you know, the development of the space program. Now, that's just a basic concept of how a society advances and functions. Where is the money going to come from? That's a whole different question. But I would say the basic conceptual building block of that speech was there is such a thing as investing in the future, and we have not been doing it. Now, the question of somehow we were able to do this in the past and we were a much less wealthy nation. I mean, the United States in 1960 – or let's say in the early 60s when the space program was developed, or before that when Eisenhower did the interstate highway system, we were a much less wealthy nation than somehow we were able to build things then. And now here we are as a much wealthier society, and somehow we can't. And the question then becomes, where is that? How were we able to do it then, but we can't do it now? Where is
because
the money going? And that's a basic question.
For the federal government workers, that's why.
No, that's not true. We were, though, and we also had a 94% tax rate for the wealthiest Americans then.
On very upper-end income.
Yes.
So, way up.
But 60% and 70% on the not-so-way up.
Yeah. Well, you know, I'm just saying somehow we were able to do big important, I assume we all, you know, I drove across the country in 1968 and there weren't interstate highways all the way then. I assume we all think the interstate highway system is probably a good thing to have and the space program is probably a good thing to do. Somehow we were able to do that when we had much less income per capita, way less. So that's a second question. He didn't get to that, but how did we do it when we were less wealthy and we can't do it now? That's a whole question about where the money's going, but I think that was the basic concept he was discussing. There is such a thing as investment, as opposed to just random, stupid spending, and there's a lot of that, too.
Before we go back to Darlene and Bob, let me go to the phones at 410-319-8888, as I promised. And Mike, you're on the air. Mike, you there?
Yes, Yes, I'm here. Can you hear me?
We can hear you.
I'm delighted. All right, for the purposes of these remarks, I want you all to think of me as a person who makes widgets. I own a widget factory. You got that, Ms. Kennedy?
Yes, I have it.
I want to tell you why I make my widgets in these poor countries overseas. See, I used to make my widgets here. I laid off workers. I put in electronics. And then I found out I could send to my factories over to really poor countries where they will out the work for less than the computer. What the hell am I going to do? I'm going to make widgets as cheap as possible. That's the profit motive in the capitalist system. I crossed myself when I said that. I love capitalism.
There's nothing wrong with being a capitalist, but I want to say something else. Excuse me, darling.
Finish your thought, Michael, so that Darlene can respond.
Oh, I can't wait. I will. Believe me, I'm going to listen. But I want to say something about the speech that our president gave and the fact that he didn't mention these so-called flash words that Mr. Summerby referred to. I don't think that's exactly the term he used, but these flash points that people are going to get excited about. Well, that's because it's a crummy speech. If you don't, the flash points are the problems we have to solve. And we do need, this is how we're going to solve unemployment. That is a real problem. This is how we're going to solve the problem of so-called illegal aliens. Man, my grandparents were illegal. I'm still here. He didn't mention it. It was a weak speech. It was a weak vision. We need something better.
All right, Darlene, and then Bob, and then...
Well, I certainly don't disagree with Mike. The motive for companies going, outsourcing, as they say these days. But, you know, America is becoming one of the highest corporate taxing entities in the world. That's one issue. Secondly, regulation. I'm not saying now, you know, when a conservative or a Republican talks about regulation or deregulating, people automatically think, oh, they want kids to have their fingers cut off and people, you know, working all hours. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about, you know, the silly regulations, and there are silly regulations out there that put more stress on companies that they have to find other ways to get the product made as cheaply as possible, whether it's to get a bigger profit or it's whether to be able to sell it a little cheaper. So my concern is that what ideas are going to be put in place to allow our companies to come back to this country? Part of it is, when we talk about education, we have a generation of technologically savvy young people, which I think is fantastic because that is the future. Nonetheless, there are going to be kids and even adults who aren't technologically savvy, who don't want to play on a computer, who want to touch and feel things, who are tactile learners, who maybe want to work on an engine, who want to work, you know, doing more hands-on stuff. And we are not, you know, focusing education on those things. I remember we used to have shop in school. There was a reason we shop, not just because girls sewed and boys went and banged things, but it was to help to give ideas to young people about future careers and what you might want to do with your talents. And I think, this is more of a grassroots issue than it is a government problem. As far as I'm concerned, it's about us as society, addressing these issues. But nonetheless, I just wanted to address Mike's concern. And, yes, outsourcing is a big problem, but companies are being overregulated. And I'm not blaming just President Obama, because he certainly didn't put all these laws into place. We're talking several years between the former last President Bush as well as Clinton, and that's part of the problem. And so these companies have gone abroad, and there's nothing wrong with capitalism, but there certainly is something wrong when we can't be host to more companies and then they're leaving because they can't afford to produce here.
Yeah, I'll disagree with Mike to this extent. And again, I'm not trying to defend Obama or say that I know why he gave the speech he did. Mike suggested that it would have been a better speech if he had said, this is how we're going to solve it with respect to several issues. He mentioned immigration, maybe I can't remember the other one he mentioned. Obama could have given that speech, and that would have been fine, and we could be here evaluating the caliber of his proposed solution. But it doesn't matter. If Obama had announced the cure for cancer last night, it would quickly get voted down. Given the way our politics is working now, it doesn't matter if Obama or anyone else within the political system has a solution to propose for immigration or anything else. It just doesn't matter. It was by a political miracle he was able to pass a health care bill because he happened to have 60 votes in the Senate. Well, now he has 53, and the filibuster is not going to be taken down by the Senate. So no one is going to pass anything unless we somehow find a way to get back out of this mess we're in and find a way to work in a rational, in a sane political environment. I would have been perfectly happy to hear Obama give his solutions to problems last night, but it would make no difference. It would lead nowhere. It would produce nothing other than for a debating society.
Well, let's hear some of that. I want to play, before we go to Gail, our next call, let's play this clip. This is clip number one, President Barack Obama, and we'll talk about it.
A half a century ago, when the Soviets beat us into space with the launch of a satellite called Sputnik, we had no idea how we would beat them to the moon. The science wasn't even there yet. NASA didn't exist. But after investing in better research and education, we didn't just surpass the Soviets. We unleashed a wave of innovation that created new industries and millions of new jobs. This is our generation's Sputnik moment. 2 years ago, I said that we needed to reach a level of research and development we haven't seen since the height of the space race. And in a few weeks, I will be sending a budget to Congress that helps us meet that goal. We'll invest in biomedical research, information technology, and especially clean energy technology. An investment that will strengthen our security, protect our planet, and create countless new jobs for our people.
Now, I mean, when you hear that, and then we'll go right back to the phones here, the question I have when I hear that part of the speech is what I said earlier. Republicans are right in the sense that investment means more spending, and it does.
Every time.
What we're not hearing, I think, is a real... Other than the nastiness we hear, we're not hearing visions from either side about how you build America. Because what Barack Obama represents on some levels, and many Democrats represent, is an idea that you need to invest in America. We need to spend money like we did in World War II, like we did when we built the railroads in 1860s and 1880s, like we did when we built the highway system in NASA. And that created jobs, and that created a new America, and that built, because we're not going to bring those factories back. Something else has to be built in America. That's what I'm talking about. And there's another vision saying, no, the only way you do it is through a free market system. No, the only way you do it is by allowing the marketplace to decide, allowing businesses to build and get off their backs, and let me keep the money I make because it's my money. And the other side says, no, you have to pay your fair share to build society. There are different visions of what America means in very broad senses.
Yeah, right.
And that's what we should be arguing and fighting and talking about and talking to American people about, not the kind of namby-pamby stuff we're dealing with.
But I think he was, again, I'm not really defending the speech, and I thought it was kind of pitiful to hear that talk about what we did with Sputnik, because it's kind of like, gee, remember when we weren't so pathetic? I mean, it was kind of, and viewed in one way, it's kind of pitiful. On the other hand, we are pathetic. Now he was presenting one position. He was imagining a country that invests in the future, that does constructive spending built on the future. Now, what you just described, what is basically has turned into the standard Republican response, which is no, it's all the individual. There's nothing else. That was the McConnell response when he heard that the speech was going to involve investment. Investment is nothing but spending and taxes. Well, no, investing actually is something more. Not that investment can't be bad investment and can't be foolish investment, but investment is more than simply spending and taxes. It's spending for a constructive purpose for the future. You know, in World War II, when we were really a poor nation, we put together this gigantic war machine in a matter of in a couple of years. In the Iraq war, we couldn't even get body armor. We couldn't even get body armor to our troops. Couldn't, after years, we still, how pathetic is this nation? We couldn't even get body armor to our troops. Their parents had to send them body armor. How pathetic has this nation become? And that's the pitiful nation that he was addressing last night. We have become a pathetic political body.
Well, you know, you raise a lot of interesting points, Bob. I mean, but the thing, you know, the Republican response both the one for the Republicans and the one that Dr. Bachman did on behalf of the Tea Party, I mean, they said the same thing. We've got to cut back the spending. I mean, we do. You know, go back to 2008, go back to 2005. We need to reverse the spending. We're trillions of dollars in debt, and there's no way we're going to come out of this hole if we continue to spend. I mean, as human beings, I mean, I think the great thing about particularly Dr. Bachman's speech was that she really, whether you agree with her policy or not, if you listen to her words, I mean, I certainly do agree to what she said last night, and also the Republican response is that, you know, spending isn't necessarily going to make something happen. I mean, these are my words, I believe the government, you know, the bureaucracy is just way out of hand. You know, yes, we were able to accomplish great things when we were a baby nation, so to speak. During World War One and Two, we were, you know, a military machine. The girls were you know, giving up their pantyhose to help the boys across, you know, overseas. And so, I don't think we necessarily need to spend more to get more, but we need to be more focused on how we utilize what we do have available. And, you know, my concern is when you talk about more programs, it's just going to make the government a bigger animal. And I disagree. You said something earlier, Mark, about, you know, when highways are built, I don't have the numbers in front of me, so I'm certainly not going to debate you on it. But I can't believe that the size of government, and I'm talking about the federal government, all the agencies, all the, you know, sub-agencies, and all these other, you know, entities that come under the government were in existence. I think it was a much smaller, you know, meaner, leaner government, and that's where we need to go back. My grandfather was part of that highway building down in the South, and so I know from my just knowing as a kid, I was excited to know, oh, my grandfather, you know, helped put 95 on the right map down in South Carolina. And, I mean, I certainly would love to see that happen, but it's got to be in an economical, smart way.
But I think everything that Darlene is saying is every concern is a valid concern. There's a new budget projection that came out today, according to the AP, $1.5 trillion for this year. 40% of spending is borrowed for this coming year. That's just astonishing. That's part of the junk heap that we lie in. Now, we have reached the point where, you know, the last hour you dealt with addiction and hitting the bottom. We have come very close to hitting rock bottom. The idea that it's just our situation is horrendous. It's bad in every direction. And the concerns that Darlene is expressing, those are real, valid concerns. But we have to learn to stop yelling at each other on the two cables as we try to find a way to put this whole mess together and start digging our way back up and out.
But the screaming at each other on the cables, I mean, the MSNBC at nighttime and Fox all day long, even if that stopped tomorrow, I mean,
there are other outlets. There are, you know, it's a part of the wider culture. But I'm just using that as an example emblem.
In fairness to our listeners, Gail, you're on the air. Hi, Gail, you're on the air.
Yes, I'm here.
Welcome.
Good evening, Mark, and to your guests. I didn't catch everybody's name.
That's okay.
You all have just stolen my thunder, and my whole perspective of this is that we are missing what we have in a leader. This gentleman is a visionary. And being a visionary, he can bring things to light that need to be done. We need think tanks and not political parties to get together and put things in perspective, work on projects together one at a time to accomplish things. There's nothing in business, capitalism, anything else that you can do without investing. You're going to have to invest. And yes, we may be in debt for a while, but if any one of those projects takes off and becomes successful is going to bring back the money that you put into the investment. This country has gone to self-serving, politicized, whatever. I can't even find a word for it. But what we need are think tanks, and he needs to surround himself with people who are not concerned about whether they're Republican or Democrat, or how much money are they going to have to pay in taxes, but how can we help fix the situation? That's all I have to say.
Gail, thank you so much for your call. And let's get another quick call. We have time for one more quick caller. Yes, no, because I'm not looking at the numbers here. Chase, you're on the air with a quick thought.
Good evening. How you doing?
Good evening. We don't have a lot of time, Chase. So I
know. I just want to say, just like the other caller, I mean, you touched on some of the points. But, you know, from what I heard, I agree with you. It was kind of a weak speech. I think we needed to hear things in more practical terms instead of theoretical. And, you know, the sister situation here is jobs. I mean, we know we need to send our kids to school to get college degrees. But the reality is there are countless people walking around with degrees and graduate degrees that still can't get jobs because the jobs don't exist. Mm. So tell me how, you know, tell me about how we're going to reverse this trend of this outsourcing and jobs going elsewhere. And so we can start producing the products that we need here in this that we use here in this country.
I agree the absence of the words jobs and unemployment was the biggest problem.
It was a huge problem. Yeah. I want to thank Darlene Kennedy and Bob Swinburne both for taking the time for us this evening, for being here on the show. Thank you both so much.
Thank you, Mark. And you guys be safe tonight.
Yeah, we will. Do our best.
And we're walking home.
Thank you for driving over here. We're going to try to drive our way home slowly and see if we can get there. I advise all you all to do the same. I thank you all for calling in and writing in. I sort of didn't get to the email that came in, but we'll do it next time. The Mark Steiner Show is brought to you by Urbanite Magazine's new e-zines. It's a simple way to stay connected to the topics and events you care about most. Daily content on art, culture, food, design, style, green living, and much more can be delivered to your inbox. Registration is available at UrbanlightBaltimore.com. The Mark Steiner Show is a production of the Center for Emerging Media. Our producers are Justin Levy and Christina Arison. We're engineered by Zachary Coleman. Our interns today are Justin Green, Will Mason, and Christina Grimes. Our theme music by Wal Matthews of Clean Cuts. To hear this show again, podcast any of our past shows, hear new additional interviews, and find out information about our guests and their work, visit us on the web at steinershow.org. And for public radio, WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community. I'm Mark Steiner. Take care and drive safe out there.